This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Dave is headed back from Rocks in Your Head. Rocks in Your Head remote. Yeah, wow. He's coming right back. And we got a great show for you today. We've got the mayor of Salem here. It's Tuesday. We've got Chuck Bennett here, mayor. And, of course, following the mayor, we're going to have Aaron Whiff from NFIB talking about the session and how it went and what the scorecard is and all of those things. So, Mayor, welcome back. It's nice
Thank
to
you.
See you.
Thank you very much, Brent. I enjoy it.
I made Mayor Bennett, affectionately known as Chuck, a little uncomfortable because I said, hey, you know what I want to do today? I want to talk about you.
Yeah.
And so, usually we're doing, hey, folks.
So grab that time it takes to build a sandwich.
We have things to talk about the city and the city governance and the pragmatic things that happen and a few of the political things that happen at city council and things that the city's doing and problems to be solved and good things that are happening. However, let's get to know Mayor Chuck a little bit more because I want to dive into the statewide politics. Basically because of his history at the legislature. He spent a lot of time in that building, and I'd kind of like to get his take on it after going through a relatively historic legislative session. So, Chuck, why don't you tell the listener how far back your history with Salem goes?
It goes to 1966. I grew up in Opportunity, Washington, just outside of Spokane. It's Spokane Valley. Mm. And I came here in 1966 to attend Willamette, stayed here for 4 years, graduated from Willamette. I would go home most summers. A couple of summers I stayed here, or I went to Europe on one summer. And then in 1970, I graduated. I stayed here. I've worked here in the area since then. My initial work was at Damish State Hospital. I was a psychiatric aide. It was a very interesting job. And then I went into newspapering. I had been an English major at Willamette, so I knew how to write, and I didn't want to go to graduate school. I really wanted to go to work. I was enjoying working. So I went to work as what's called a stringer for the old Capital Journal. Then I became editor of the Woodburn Independent in Woodburn for a few years, and then back to the Capital Journal as their City Hall reporter in the early to mid-70s, kind of mid-70s. Then worked there for a few years and went out to Staten and edited the newspaper there.
What a string of events,
years.
Though.
It
I mean,
fun.
Over time to be, a reporter for the city council for the journal back in the 70s, right?
Yeah.
And then you draw a timeline string between that and sitting at the mayor's chair today. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where I got the bug. I got to know Bob Lindsay, Kent Aldrich, and the council from that period. Really outstanding people. I really enjoyed them. I became very interested in what they were doing. I still see them. Then I was elected to the state legislature in the early 80s, served there for a term, and then went into lobbying. I had my own lobbying and political consulting company for about 15 years and spent the final 20 years of my working life working for the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators as a lobbyist.
Okay, so now you get the picture, folks, in terms of Chuck's been in the building. So he served in the legislature and then became a lobbyist and spent a lot of his career advising people and running the administration. And when you say school administrators, that represents who?
That would be sort of everybody that's not a teacher.
Okay.
Or a certified staff. It's superintendents, assistant superintendents, principals, HR director, you name that whole gamut of people who are outside of the licensed, the portion that are licensed teachers or certified staff,
so the superintendent,
janitors or secretaries. Or
all right, so we're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett. We're talking about his history. We're leading up to trying to get his take on the legislative session that just passed. So have you seen any legislative, in the 80s, have you seen any legislative sessions that were dominated or even a majority Republican?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay. Both, yeah. both
there
houses?
Were several, there were several sessions where the... there was a Republican majority. It would be in the probably in the 80s and 90s. Larry Campbell was Speaker. Bev Clarno was Speaker. There were other, and I apologize,
I can't say the
others. There were a number of really well-known political figures in the state who served as speakers, particularly of the House. Not as common on the Senate side, but the House has really moved back and forth quite a bit in that way. So, yeah, I've seen it.
Good.
And I'll tell you, it for a long period of time, and I think this is part of it, Peter Courtney and I were in the House together, and Peter kind of grew up in that particular area of his life, I think, in a more bipartisan spirit than we've seen developing over the past probably 10 years in the legislature. And he has been, and maybe even shorter, certainly shorter in the Senate, is this sense that the place works best when everybody works together and everyone's ideas are incorporated in, particularly into complicated pieces of legislation.
Is that true of the Salem City Council as well?
Yeah.
The
when one
there.
Side's dominant, I think it really requires people to kind of come with their heads balanced. And that's been my experience with the city council over the years. There are times it'll go a little far one way or the other, but it tends to pull back toward the middle because I think that's where people expect you to operate. They don't expect you to just argue. They expect you to get stuff done, and particularly with a city council where it's really providing leadership for service delivery. It's pretty hard to say having a policeman arrive at your house when you call or help you on the street or a firefighter or any of the other services we provide that is somehow partisan. That really is just a call for service. If your water isn't working, you want a water guy there. You want a,
right.
The list goes on.
Yes, I understand. All right, so back to the legislature. We're going to get to this after the break, but it seems so contentious. And you said 10 years, this is getting more and more kind of partisan and less collaborative ever since they had a legislature when they were split. Right? There was 30-30 in the House, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they had to work together. And I think we probably ended up a lot better legislation than we've seen since then.
Well, the other thing that has changed a lot over the years is a level of collegiality. As the legislature has become more of a job. When I was in it, it really was where you went for several months, but you didn't go there full time for your livelihood, generally. There were some who did. But the result has been more staff. The offices have changed. They're a little more isolating. When I first got near the legislature back in the 70s, they were actually on the floor. It was before the wings were built. And when the wings were built, it gave each of them offices. Before that, it was much more open and people saw each other, talked to each other. I know when I was a member, we socialized sort of without worrying too much about what party you were in. There was
those were the days.
A lot more, yeah, a lot more of that kind of activity went on, after hours activity where you'd go out and sit around,
smoke cigars, and drink whiskey and make deals.
Whatever,
right?
Yeah.
All right. We're talking to Mayor Chuck Bennett, the mayor of the city of Salem, about his past in the legislature. And right after the break, we're going to talk about what's currently happening in the legislature and the mayor's take on that. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. Dave Bourne is on his way back from being on location. We have with us Mayor Chuck Bennett for the City of Salem, and we're talking about the legislature and a little bit of its history. And I wish you had heard just the last 3 minutes that I heard about Mayor Chuck talking about what it was like back in the day when people weren't cloistered into their various offices and into their caucuses, and there was a lot more conversation and getting to know people as human beings. And I mean, to me, it goes back to about the 90s when there was contention with at the U.S. on the U.S. scene. You remember that? And then the Republicans contract for America. And then suddenly Republicans want babies to starve. Republicans want your grandma kicked out on the street. And maybe it's always been that way.
Democrats are all socialists. I mean, that's
And it goes back, of course, you know, mudslinging goes back to before the revolution. However, just the animosity, like, you can't be seen working with that. Like, Biden gets thrown under the bus by Kamala Harris, and Rush Limbaugh was talking about in this last hour. It's like, so we're not supposed to talk to anybody? It worked a little bit better when everybody knew each other and where they're coming from.
Well, it's a real theory and really a practice of collegiality, and it was quite good. I mean, it just, the result was, I think people understood each other's motivations better. Mm. There was not the kind of mistrust. I think people generally knew where each other were on some of the really hot button issues of the time, but were able to talk about the real issues you tend to deal with. I mean, there are thousands of bills that come through a legislative session. Not all of them deal with cap and trade or rent control or these really kind of hot button issues. And that's where they tended to work together, I thought, really quite well.
So this term, you have representatives saying this is the highest state of distrust that's ever been in the building. And people are distrusting the other side. They're not taking them with the word. They don't trust the leadership. They don't trust the other party. So you definitely have partisanship, and that's apparent, right? But you add partisan with distrust, and it sounds like fairly toxic. Have you seen this bad before?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't think
that's
it's...
all it's right.
I think people get... There's an awful lot of drama that goes on, and particularly coming from people who are in the middle of it. You know, it's... Everybody thinks this must be the most, best, worst...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of any session. I was in a session where the big issue was a sales tax, which wildly divided Democrats, just Democrats. And we had a supermajority in the House and a majority in the Senate. I was a Democrat, am a Democrat. And this was the Senate. I'm trying to recall which went first. The Senate adjourned, leaving the House sitting there in order to avoid voting on a sales tax. I mean, that's the kind. It was just...
Wow.
Chaotic in at that time. So I think people kind of like to, I'd like my session to be the most dramatic of all time, you know, and I think you have to be careful with that level of rhetoric. There certainly are some individuals who are very dramatic and who tend to want to dominate the news cycles on a daily basis, and they tend to come forward first. Mm-hmm. And it can look pretty bad. I mean, I have friends still in the legislature who say you go inside the caucuses, and particularly the majority caucuses, and there's a lot of internal drama. When things get tough, there are people who weep, which is odd in this kind of context. And I think people just sometimes get overwrought, and there was some of that this time. I mean, I at least from my perspective, way on the outside, looked like some real drama that was being ginned up a bit.
You have some Democrats. There was one in the news, and the quote was, you know, well, the voters gave us a supermajority, but the implication, or I I inferred from that is like, so we can steamroll whatever we want. We don't have to listen to you. And then there's people of her own caucus that maybe doesn't want to steamroll or knows that politics has a pendulum. You know what I mean? And so that's what I'm saying, in that own caucus, they could be arguing inside the House.
If there was an effective supermajority, we would have cap and trade. That is not what they had, because the majorities often revolve around issues. And they had an issue there that just didn't have a supermajority, and the outcome was the bill couldn't move. Now, it had a strong support from the governor, strong support from the speaker. I think the Senate president was very cooperative in moving it forward. It's just ultimately it did not have the votes, as he pointed out, as they got closer and closer to calling the question. So,
I loved it when they blamed the speaker for not having the votes. It's like,
or blame Peter.
Senate President.
Well, poor Peter. I mean, there certainly is a tendency in his chamber to assign blame, and it doesn't seem to be coming from the Republican side. It seems to be Democrats who get upset.
Do you miss being in the building?
No. No, I really don't.
That did not take him long to answer.
I did it for several decades and thoroughly enjoyed it. But I retired when I was 70, so I had done this a long time, and I'd started in my 20s, so it really was time for me to be done, and I enjoyed it right up until I didn't, and I have a lot of friends over there still who are telling me I got out just in time, and I'm thinking, no, I didn't. I worked probably 5 years over my due date. You know?
People still ask me, you know, now and then people ask me, do you miss city council? Do you miss being on it and this and that? And, the answer is I miss being able to do good work on behalf of the public.
Yeah.
I didn't in any way dislike being there at all. I enjoy being there, but it was a very good group to work with.
Yeah.
Diverse. Everybody had a different agenda, but people would defer to the passions and the expertise of another counselor that knew something more about this. And we did work. We did good work and moved it forward, and you were there with me, and those were good days.
Yeah, it's very good. And we still have, on the broad issues, the broad number of issues, really pretty unanimous agreement that there is a correct way and an incorrect way to proceed in terms of issues. We also have, and you can't underestimate how important this is, absolutely outstanding professional staff that really provides the kind of information that allows you to make informed decisions. And if you're paying attention, it's very hard to make really bad decisions down there because you've got people giving you such good advice.
Mm-hmm.
And cool. I think there's a lot of trust there between elected and professional officials.
So the things having to do with the legislature that just ended, did you see anything? There were some bills, of course, supported and not supported by the League of Oregon Cities. We talked to Councilor Nanke a little bit about that.
Yeah.
Things that as a mayor of our capital city, you thought, I wish they hadn't done that to us. And of course, top of mind is land use.
Yeah, you don't like seeing them go into land use. But I'll tell you, for the city of Salem, we did extremely well during this legislative session. We got, and it was a lot of it was the help of Senator Peter Courtney and work by the rest of our delegation. I'd particularly single out Brian Clem and Denise Bowles for the work that they did. Teresa Alonso did some outstanding, Leon did some outstanding work. Senator Jackie Winters, rest
God bless
soul.
Her.
Yeah, God bless her. We just have such an outstanding group of people to work with. But we got $20 million to work on ozone treatment of our water system, which is just going to make a tremendous difference in terms, I think, of public confidence in the water system. I think you can be confident today, but this just really layers on the safety onto that water system. $100,000 Representative Clem worked hard on to get for moving the Peace Mosaic from the YMCA down to the carousel. $1 million for the Jerry Frank Rotary Amphitheater.
Wow.
Again,
so we're bringing the pork
work.
Home.
I'll tell you that one. That was a lot of the work on that was done by a legislator from another part of the state, Senator Betsy Johnson from up in Scappoose, who was one of the co-chairs of Ways and Means, really helped us put that one over the edge, along with our delegation. This was a very good session. We have focused since I became mayor, and I think even before that, increasingly heavily on working with the state to get financial assistance on the variety of issues that we face, and we're doing fairly well.
I think the things in the region that can benefit us and that we already see happen is when the city speaks well and often with the counties, and speaking well and often with the transit district, with the school board, and, of course, their local contingent of representatives and senators.
I just couldn't agree more. That is so important, that level of cooperation among all these different government entities be kept front and center. And I think we've been doing that quite well.
And you just get some opportunities to leverage things. I'm like, well, if you put in a little, we can put in a little, we'll put something together that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And maybe it never would have happened, but the public's going to be better off. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
So, okay, really quickly before we go to another break and bring in Aaron with from NFIB, you mentioned the water and the ozone treatment. And so that's going to take place. Is there a timeline for that? I mean, the water's already safe.
Yeah, the water is safe.
We're going to add next level of it.
We're moving forward, and I apologize, I didn't bring a timeline. It's over the next year or two, and hopefully at some point it'd be really worth it to have Peter Fernandez again to kind of talk about where this is all going. He just got back from Washington, D.C., sort of presenting to congressional staff on algal blooms in water systems and how to handle it. So Peter's a really becoming kind of a national expert on this, whether he wants to or not.
And, you know, Peter's one of you talking about the professional staff that helps downtown at City Hall. And I think the world of that guy. And I was lucky to have him as Public Works Director, and hope his head doesn't get too big. Nobody tell him I just said that.
Okay.
Everybody just.
And I wanted to mention, if folks want to meet with me personally, I'll be at the West Salem Farmers Market along Edgewater at 9:30 a.m. on Thursday at the Farmers Market. I hope people can come by, have a cup of coffee, and we'll chat about issues they care about.
All right.
And they won't have to listen to my biography again.
West Salem Farmers Market and Thursday the 11th, coming in for coffee with Chuck. All right, we got to take a break, and thanks for being
thanks
here.
Again.
You're listening to Newsmakers. I'm Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
And if you hear that voice and recognize that, Dave's back in the studio with us, back from being on location. So welcome back. Hey, we're going to finish out the hour talking with Aaron with from the Freedom Foundation about how the public employee unions fared this legislative session. There's a lot of unwinding what happened this legislative session in terms of taxes, in terms of politics, in terms of party and all of these things, but today we want to finish up the hour talking about, well, how did the unions fare? Because we're at least talking about here on Newsmakers that the unions, meaning the public employee unions, I'm not talking about the steel workers, the independent electricians, I'm talking about people who work for the taxpayer, who have collective bargaining, and how much influence they have, which I believe is, you know, way overweighed, and how much influence do they have over a single party that has a supermajority? Mm-hmm. So, Aaron, welcome back to the studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me again.
So I know you guys have been active. I got an email from you last week, and you shared with me, you know, some of the efforts in terms of letting people know that they don't have to belong to a union to work for the government.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, we've been outreaching to all public employees to let them know that they can leave their unions. And since the U.S. Supreme Court decision Janus last year that gave all public employees the rights to leave their union and stop paying union dues, we've assisted over 15,000 people in Oregon and 50,000 people across the West Coast in leaving their unions and keeping their hard-earned dollars in their pockets rather than going to the union's radical political agenda.
You got to be getting a little blowback and pushback from people who aren't happy that you're notifying their members and say, hey, you know, you can leave.
Yeah, unlike most other private entities, the unions don't provide much of a benefit to these people. So when you're out there telling them, they opt out in droves. But as you can imagine, when you're a union, you've had a monopoly on these taking money from these people. We're disrupting their business. So they're, of course, not happy that we're doing it. But all we're doing is informing people of their rights. And, you know, if the unions were so good and great, then people wouldn't leave. But the fact is they're not.
Well, we're talking to Aaron from the Freedom Foundation. And do you think you've peaked yet? Do you think the wave of people exiting now that you've got the one-year anniversary of the Supreme Court decision, right? Or do you think momentum is still growing?
Momentum's growing. It's a snowball effect. I mean, what we're finding is that most people, we help most people opt out when we speak to them face to face. And the reality is we have not spoken to most public employees face to face across Oregon. So our objective is to have a face to face conversation with every single public employee and make sure that they are fully aware of their rights and that if they do want to leave, that we can assist them with doing that.
Wow. Is it problematic for them? Do you think they receive blowback or even pressure internally in the workforce?
Yeah, they certainly receive pressure from the unions to remain union members. We've had multiple instances where unions have tried to scare the people into staying with the union. They've lied to them. They do just about anything to keep these people in the union, and it doesn't even stop there. Some people are not even being allowed to leave the union after they've requested it. The union's still taking money from thousands of people that have requested to leave.
And how do they account for that?
Imagine a gym membership having in this fine print of your gym membership that you can't leave until a year of this contract.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal with the union membership cards. They have a language in the fine print in their membership cards that states, I agree, regardless of my membership status, to pay union dues for a period of up to 1 year, mm-hmm. and I can only leave within a 10 or 15 day window within the year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty tight.
That is a 10 to 15 day window.
Yikes.
Would that hold up in court?
Well, we're suing them over it right now. We have two lawsuits in Oregon, and we have three defendants, the Oregon Education Association, the SEIU, and the AFSCME, trying to get them to justify this practice. The bottom line is Janus gave people the right to leave their unions and stop paying union dues. It did not say when the unions decide that you can do that.
Yeah. I just want to run that last sentence into a clip and roll it over and over again.
Yeah, so. And my feedback to them was, well, if we're going to limit it to windows, why don't we say it's going to be February 29th every 4 years? And it's got to be at the stroke of midnight.
Yeah.
How do you come up with these windows and justify them? It's ludicrous. Constitutional rights are not constitutional rights if you limit them to windows.
How quickly do you expect that court challenge to progress?
Well, we're in federal court in Oregon, so we'll lose in the Ninth Circuit, and then we'll get kicked up to the U.S. Supreme Court. This will be a 2 or 3 year deal, but that doesn't concern me that much because once a favorable ruling does come out, then the unions are going to have to pay back all this money that they've taken from these people illegally.
Wow, I hope they're using a sinking fund for that. They're setting right. it aside for not only paying for the attorneys for that many years into that many levels of lawsuits, but also have to pay them back. You would think that you wouldn't be losing in the court because you have a Supreme Court case that's settled.
Yeah, precedent. Yeah, I believe we're going to be successful in the U.S. Supreme Court. The fact is that there are lawsuits that are a copycat of this. We work with National Right to Work, and we have lawsuits similar across a lot of different states.
So, Aaron, tell us about, in the middle of the session, there was talk about, and frankly, I didn't understand the circle of events where they were trying to get the state to collect the union dues on their behalf and then forward it to the union. And it seemed like to me it was a workaround in trying to avoid an interruption in the cash.
Yeah, House Bill 2643 is the bill that you're referring to. And what that would have done is it would have made the state pay union dues on behalf of public employees rather than have union dues go through their paychecks. And the logic here was that if somebody opts out of their union, the taxpayer will cover their portion of the union dues so that the unions would still get paid.
You're joking.
No, it was a, it's a, we called it a slush fund. And I spoke about it and Fox and other media outlets, and there was a lot of pressure on the legislature and the representative that was introducing that bill to make that not go forward. And it was introduced and sponsored by a union, the OSEA, which is the Classified School Employees Union.
And how? Where did it go?
It did not. It died after the media gave them a lot of pressure.
But, so good work.
Yeah, yeah. Work. Thankfully, we got one small victory.
Yay, Aaron!
Preposterous.
That is crazy.
It's just, hey, let's let the state collect the union dues and forward them on, even if the employee doesn't want to pay for it.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. So you also, we talked a couple of months ago in the middle of the session about a union kind of wish list. So how did they fare in that?
Yeah, House Bill 2016 was the second highest priority. That passed. It did get dumbed down slightly. There was some amendments. The media, again, put some pressure on them to do with a public record section of the bill. And so it did get dumbed down. Those amendments were introduced and passed. But, I mean, it's still... You know, I've got a list in front of me here of 10 things that this bill did. Two of them got wiped out, but this is still a horrible bill.
Yeah, I remember. And actually, it was about PERS. I was at a forum at the Salem Area Chamber, right? And the conversation was about PERS, but this came up where the school district was saying, well, now there's a bill that is going to force me to pay people to do union work on the clock. And that was part of this, right?
Yeah, it forces the taxpayer to pay for union shop stewards' activities. Previously, the law of the land was that you cannot force the taxpayer to do that. They will get paid by the taxpayer, by the state, but the union would reimburse the state for those activities. That is wiped out. That will be wiped away as of January 1st.
How do you feel about that, Dave? Somebody could be working for the state government, and the government is paying them a paycheck to work on behalf of its advocacy union.
Right? No.
It's like, yes, they're on the clock. And so now you have to build into your budget all of these hours of non-productivity so that they can do union member recruitment, union member administration, and all those things, all that planning. We're paying for that.
Thank God it's going to be wiped away on January 1st, right?
No, that is going to be introduced on January 1st.
What?
January 1st, that's when the bill comes into effect.
That's going to die.
It has to die. It just passed.
There'll be a legal challenge.
I would hope
I can assure
Holy
you
cow.
Of that. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it up to the Freedom Foundation to do that, or are there other groups that would also challenge that?
No, we welcome that kind of activity because we like to sue unions, and that's what we're experts at.
He welcomes the challenge.
Folks, if you could see Aaron, his face, it's just like, it's so matter of fact. We like to sue unions. All right. Real quickly, also, this is House Bill 2016. So it was their wish list, and they got most of they want. What else is on our list that's really problematic?
Well, let's talk about that in the second segment.
Okay.
I mean, to talk about the public employees paying for shop stewards' activity, let me take that one step further. The Janus decision decided that everything a union does is inherently political. This is not public employees paying for your friendly union activities or however you want to view it. This is the taxpayer paying for political activity directly. Mm. This is a stepping stone to enabling the allowing the government to pay direct money to the DNC. This is exactly the same situation. There's no in the law, in the eyes of the courts, this is exactly the same.
There's a listener in their car right now screaming at their radio saying, no, it's not, because they do collective bargaining. They're doing these activities on behalf of workplace conditions and wage negotiation. And that's inherently political?
Let me be clear. Everything a government union does is inherently political as of the U.S. Supreme Court decision.
All right, I got that. And, and given that, we're going to take
Crystal
a quick
clear.
Break. We're going to come back and see how the campaign is doing and letting everybody know that they can come out. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne and Aaron Wythe from the Freedom Foundation. You're listening to 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Warren, and we welcome back to our studios Freedom Foundation, the Oregon director, Aaron Wythe. And we're talking about House Bill 2016 and how the unions, the public employee unions, fared in the legislative session and what their next steps might be now that they got their wish list passed. You said it was dumbed down a little bit, right?
Yeah.
And that was to placate people that still had heartburn over it. I mean, I'd have a heartburn over the whole list myself.
Yeah, I mean, we do as well, but it got a little bit better due to some of the media attention and what they did for it. One of the things that got removed from it was making it an unfair labor practice to allow an organization to contact employees about their rights over Janus. That was something that got removed from the bill.
Wow. In other words, they wanted to silence you.
Yeah, basically, that's exactly what they were trying to do, but they couldn't get that section of the bill passed with the rest of the public records stuff that they wanted to change, which is great for us, meaning that we can still get through email filters and obtain public employee emails to tell them about these rights under Janus.
Yeah, sometimes you read those sentences, it's like, have you heard of the First Amendment?
Right.
Like, they had to know that's going to be immediately challenged on a First Amendment, that you have a right to talk to another individual regardless of where they work. It's like, you can't silence you.
No, you can't.
All right, so that got taken out, so that's good, because it wouldn't have stood up in court anyway.
Yeah, and yeah, it wouldn't have. But we spoke about the taxpayer paying for union activities, mm-hmm. for the shop stewards. It provides unions the ability to determine what is reasonable conduct in union meetings, meaning that if you want to go to a union meeting and talk about Janus, they can say, no, you can't talk about that. It gives the unions exclusive public employee information that is not available to other organizations. This can be this is home addresses, cell phone numbers, personal email addresses, and it does not limit the unions to who they can share that information with. Meaning that they can share it with a political advocacy group that they agree with. And it actually gives the union more control over public employee information than it does the government.
Wow.
It's a big...
But
yeah.
they're not too powerful.
No.
Okay.
It's bizarre. It allows public employees who are not represented by a union to make payments if they choose to, which is bizarre. I don't know why you would do that. It allows the unions to deduct union dues by telephonic authorization, meaning that if you get somebody on the phone and they agree to pay union dues over the phone, they can do that. It's not a professional conduct, obviously. Where else do you see you be able to agree to something like that on the phone? It has to be a written agreement.
Well, when somebody wants to opt out of union dues or being represented by the union, that can be done over the phone, right, Aaron?
No, exactly. No? That's another part of the bill. It tries to legalize people's ability to opt out and limits it so they have to sign an originally signed document and deliver it to the union headquarters. It does not state whether that's a postal delivery or whether it's a hand delivery.
All right, so they're not all bad people. I mean, I don't want to be too sinister about this, but doesn't pictures come to your mind of having undue influence and having a lot of pressure? You know, you can imagine it's like, hey, Harry, you're voting with us, aren't you? You're not leaving. I mean, I'm just a little worried about how much
intimidation
there would be to go to the union headquarters and say, hey, I'm out.
Yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right. We see it all the time.
I just imagine four guys stepping out of their office with baseball bats swinging. Hey, you're going to be voting and staying with us, aren't you?
That's an unfair characterization, but we were all thinking it.
Right. I'm sorry. That's what I was thinking.
So, all right, go on.
Well, I'll give you one of the worst parts of this bill. It shields the union from being liable for illegally taking union dues from people, meaning that if they decide to take union dues from somebody who's already opted out and we were to sue them in state court over this issue, they'd be protected. They would not be liable for taking those union dues. Wow. They're legalizing stealing.
Wow.
What?
Let's make sure that we don't have any repercussions to illegal activity. As long as you're a member of the union.
Exactly.
None of special rights.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's an attempt at trying to go at our lawsuits that we have against them to get these union dues back for people. What they didn't think of is that our lawsuits are in federal court and we don't have state claims here. We're suing them in federal court and federal claims. This is irrelevant to us.
All right. So 15,000 people have left the respective unions here in Oregon so far in the last last 12 months, right, since the decision. Where's it going? How much is that of the whole, and how much money more do you think will take that step?
There are 160,000 public employees in the state. We home in on free unions, the largest free unions, which is OEA, SEIU, and AFSCME. Those are who we've been primarily outreaching to, so the bulk of those people have left from those free unions. SEIU and OEA, those union dues equal anything from $1,000 to $1,100 a year. That's what these people are saving in union dues. AFSCME is slightly less. It's about $700-$800 a year that these people are saving that is now removed from the union's budget and not going towards political activity.
Wow. And so you said you want to reach them out to them one by one. That's a lot of people to reach out to. You have a big network.
Yeah, we do. We have canvassers that travel the state. They go to the homes of these people. They go to the offices of these people, all delivering the message to them that they can leave their union and stop paying union dues.
For some people, that message is probably unwelcome. Do you get a lot of rocks thrown and slings and arrows?
You know, we haven't seen violence as of yet, but we have certainly seen a lot of pushback from people who do not want their fellow public employees to hear about these rights. But the bottom line is we exist to do this. We have the right to tell these people this information. And for the most part, we're received with open arms, even from the opposition, because I tell all of our canvassers, kill them with kindness. We're demonized so much by these unions. Go there with a smile. Occasionally, we go out there and hand out donuts and coffee outside their offices. You can't be mad at people doing that.
We're just giving you information.
Yeah, like, you can't.
It's just information. It's not like you have undue intimidation for them to leave, right?
Yeah. They come after us in other ways. They don't tend to attack our canvassers.
In other ways, what do you mean?
Well, they attack us in three ways. They attack us with litigation for one, frivolous lawsuits. They've sued us for multiple issues. One of them was torturous business interference in Washington State. That's a whole other story, but a judge threw out those claims very easily, even in a liberal state like Washington. They attack us with legislation. So House Bill 2016 is a prime example. They're not doing this bill in other states that we are not operating in. And then the last thing is personal attacks, and these tend to be the keyboard warriors and people that are paid by unions to do this. And they send mail to me and my neighbors. They've been to my house. They put nasty things on the internet and think that this is some way of attacking me and having a response.
Wow, personal attacks.
Yeah.
To your house.
Yeah, I mean, and the other side to the coin is I kind of welcome this because it's one, if you want to come to my house, come on over. I mean, I don't want to encourage people to necessarily bring violence to me, but if that's what you want to do, then feel free. But what I will say is it's a measurement of success. If we're not successful, they're not doing this.
How big do you think the Freedom Foundation will get when it comes to the nationwide picture?
I think we're going to continue to expand. I don't think that there's any way that we've seen this kind of traction on the West Coast and it doesn't catch on nationwide. And I'd say that it's definitely on the cards in the foreseeable future.
Wow. Okay, we're talking to Aaron with the Freedom Foundation about how the public employee unions fared this year. Thank you for being with us here again. I appreciate it. It's always great to hear this. It's a big issue for me. I don't mind them existing, but I do mind them setting the policy direction for the entire state. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on Newsmakers.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.